SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
Football Full Circle is back today as we get things rolling, but it's not Scott Wetzel anymore. It's the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi, back in the saddle on FFC on Sports Grid Radio today, and I am Ben Stevens. Joe Lisi, we are glad to have you back on the program, and I say program intentionally because SEC Media Days rolls on into its second day. Nick Saban at the podium earlier today discussing the offseason war of words against his former assistant in Jimbo Fisher. We had Will Anderson up there, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner in Bryce Young from Alabama as well. Vanderbilt on the stage as we speak. Joe, we are getting into that point right now where it's the unofficial kickoff of a new college football season, and it feels good to be talking some shop with you.
Oh, it does. SEC Media Week, Media Month. Let's talk about it because the storylines are just so robust, not just from yesterday with Brian Kelly and Lane Kiffin up there talking NIL, talking expansion and college football playoff, but obviously you mentioned Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban going at it. Let's not forget Kirby Smart and the defending national champion Georgia Bulldogs will be up over the course of the next few days, but that's what it's all about. You know, on top of the storylines, on top of where we're headed in possible expansion and potentially a college football playoff, 4-8-12. This is what it's all about because now we are in full gear. Even though the season doesn't kick off for about another 4 or 5 weeks, Ben, I can't wait to see how these coaches approach NIL and, more importantly, the landscape of college football because they're recruiting each and every day to outman and outmaneuver Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide because up until this point, he's done it better than anybody.
Lisi, that's also been a part of what we've tried to stress here, right? It's not only previewing a new 2022 campaign where coaches and players will be asked about depth chart and season goals and what does the game plan look like for the opening week or what are you guys trying to instill when fall camp opens up in a couple of weeks? It's going to be that further conversation about the ever-evolving landscape of college athletics, but certainly as it all pertains to college football. So Nick Saban and the Tide were there in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame earlier this morning. Vandy just a little bit ago. Mississippi State and South Carolina later this afternoon. Whenever Mike Leach takes the stage, the Pirate himself, he'll probably have some wild things to say. And we had some comments yesterday, Joe, about this changing time in college sports. Lane Kiffin, who has been very vocal about name, image, and likeness, the head coach, of course, of Ole Miss, speaking yesterday, pretty much saying when you've legalized cheating, which is how he feels about name, image, and likeness, or at least the idea of having these booster-backed collectives being able to operate in a certain pay-for-play format, you are going to have the players and the teams and the organizations, the programs, Joe, that have all the money, they're going to be the one winning out on recruits. It's like that professional system. He tied it into Major League Baseball, which is currently at the All-Star break. You have those big market teams that have the payroll within that salary cap to pay the best players, and thus they have the most sustained success. I'm not quite sure it's there, but at least Lane Kiffin is able to call a spade a spade.
Oh, I think he's right. I mean, I'll take two programs in particular in terms of what they paid high school players, you know, for the ability and the opportunity to come to their respective colleges. Well, let's look at Miami in terms of Jaden Rashada, right? $8.5-9 million, turned down 11. And how about Nico with Tennessee? $8 million, the highest story recruit for the Tennessee Volunteers, are up against Peyton Manning, right? He's getting $8 million to play for the Volunteers and Josh Heupel. Those are two quarterbacks that really, when you look at it, are going to make more money potentially right now than what they might make in the NFL maybe fast forward 4 or 5 years. So at the end of the day, it's all about what you can pay, what can you close the gap in terms of the programs that you're trying to compete with. And for Miami, it's Clemson, and for Tennessee, it's Nick Saban and obviously Georgia in the SEC East. So the ability to close the gap, teams like Texas Tech now giving 25,000 NIL deals to every single player. They want to close the gap on obviously Oklahoma State and now Baylor. So you're going to see programs start to step up with the alumni and the boosters, open up their pockets, because that's what it's all about. We know the more that you spend, the potentially more that comes into the program, you reap the rewards of success of getting top 10 and top 5 talent.
If I am giving my opinion here, Lisi, I actually think that's a really good thing, and I think it might bring a little bit more variety to college football. When you have fan bases and programs like Texas Tech that is not necessarily all that competitive on a national landscape, but you have a very devout fan base with large boosters and who have big pockets, and they can open up that bankroll to maybe get some recruits that would only go to Texas or Oklahoma or other areas in the South that might consider Texas Tech because of some of those opportunities. Again, it's all hopefully tied to name, image, and likeness. In this instance, in Lubbock, it will be increased charity work, whatever that means. We know what we're really discussing here, but again, that is the system in which college football now operates, where schools like Alabama and Georgia and Penn State and Ohio State have dominated the recruiting rankings for the last decade, that maybe you get a couple of schools like that, even include Tennessee in that conversation, to get some of the best recruits that otherwise would just pick Alabama or Notre Dame or whatever it might be. That might open up a little bit more variety and a little bit more competitiveness, actually, on a national landscape in college football. We'll continue the conversation as we go through conference media days around the country. Up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back on Football Full Circle, looking around SEC Media Days, the second of four Media Days. So as Joe Lisi said, it's kind of SEC Media Week in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame. It got underway yesterday, Joe, on a Monday. We were just discussing how a lot of the conversation around whatever is your favorite conference, whatever is your favorite school, is going to be about the changing times we are seeing in college sports. Some will be about conference realignment that we'll get to in a little bit, but others will be about name, image, and likeness. And Lane Kiffin was making a point that you almost are at a professional organizational standpoint now when it comes to college sports. And he's not wrong in saying that, where these booster-backed NIL collectives are contributing a lot of their own money to bring in and attract the highest-rated recruits across the country in college football. And Joe, we're seeing that at a ton of places. We just shared what is happening at Texas Tech. Iowa is having their own swarm collective, as it is known, meet with the media today to share its goals for charity work and then how they will pay for these name, image, and likeness opportunities. And there's that weird line, right, between what actually is NIL in its true essence and what is just pay for play under a different term. Well, we're not entirely sure right now because it was put into place just over a year ago and there was no legislation or guidelines or regulations before things happened. We have had to be reactionary because the NCAA is a sham of an organization. But Joe, Lane Kiffin made a point yesterday that I actually want to discuss here, pretty much saying that when you have these booster-backed collectives, they are now going to dictate who goes to what school, when the coaches should play this kid, and they will have the say in recruiting, where normally it was the recruiting staff under the head coach and that coaching staff that would be making the decisions. I actually disagree with that. I don't think that will be the reality of what we see in college football.
Well, I think it could depend on the program, right? It could depend on a program like Texas, where they're just so, you know, rich that they're just going to throw, you know, dollars and cents at these kids and say, you know, we want this kid. I brought this up last year as well, when the NIL deal in Auburn with Bo Nix and TJ Finley, how do you sort of, you know, navigate through that if you're a first-year head coach in Brian Harsin? They can't do it with Nick Saban. We know that, right? They respect him too much. What happens about a coach, though, Ben, that that's on the hot seat, a coach that maybe hasn't gotten it done, and now the boosters in a specific location or program say, you know what, you haven't gotten it done in 2 or 3 years, it's going to be our way or no way. Then he might have to sort of reform to what the boosters want. I still believe that the coaches need some sort of, you know, they have to have some sort of oversight in this, because you can't just have, you know, the inmates driving the bus, right, and running the asylum. You can't do that. So I think there needs to be a happy balance. I believe in Lane and what he said. I believe that a cap does need to be in place, because at what point is enough enough when you have a kid making $9 million, a position coach taking, let's say, $800,000, or a smaller school, $400,000, or maybe a million, big deal. He's not going to listen to his position coach. He's going to listen to the people that gave him the money. So that's the problem that is on the horizon. Not today, not tomorrow, but in a couple of years, I think it could definitely rear its head.
Well, I think these boosters obviously are very, very involved. They are very passionate about their favorite college football program, most likely their alma mater. They might even be reading recruiting forums and following along with the latest recruiting rankings and headlines and all of that stuff. But I think what Lane is understanding of, and as coaches will see this around the country, you are almost going to have a split in your program, a split in your organization. Where are the coaches that are involved with the X's and O's and the depth chart management and getting a game plan ready? And you will have true scouting departments and recruiting organizations to fill in the rest that will work with these NIL booster back collectives. And for a certain majority, Joe, the head coach always answers to the boosters, because the head coach answers to the administration that is funded by the boosters a lot as well. That is the nature of college football. It's boosters that were in love with Nick Saban that paid for a $3 million renovation for his house. That is always what we have seen in college sports. Right now, it's just a little bit more in front of our face. So if you're a good head coach, understanding of the current climate and format that you are in, I don't think you'll have to bend the knee to any booster back collectives. You will work in tandem along with the rest of your organization to make sure you get the recruits that you think are best for your program that will then have the funding to go out there and hopefully attract them to come. But that was also a little bit of what Nick Saban had to say today, Joe, because he has been critical of name, image, and likeness at times in the changing landscape we are seeing when it comes to recruiting. Of course, the comments about Jimbo Fisher and how he bought his recruiting class. What Jimbo did, if he even did anything, was with all within the legal guidelines, and all was perfectly in line with what we are seeing right now in college football. And although Nick Saban might be skeptical at times, we also know that Nick Saban is highly adaptable to whatever changes are happening in college football. But Joe, he shared today at the press conference at SEC Media Days how he's a little bit concerned by these booster back collectives having the ultimate say, if you will, in college football recruiting. That at the end of the day, you still have to make the money make sense for these college athletes to see the best of their profitability, that if they want to still compete and they have that desire to compete, which I believe they all do, it can't just be the boosters that are offering the most money that's the final determination at the end of the day. You would hope that would not be the case, but that was Nick Saban's concern when it comes to name, image, and likeness in these booster back collectives.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Nick is up there. He's 70 years old. He's not a young coach anymore, coaching on the sidelines in East Lansing with Plaxico Burress and Cedric Irvin. And Gus Ornstein, the former Notre Dame transfer. He's an older guy. Old. So, you know, he understands the writing on the wall. He only has a certain amount of time left before the game passes him by. And maybe he still wants to capture another national championship to put 8 in his belt, just like Tom Brady. It's the same thing, I think, that he's concerned about, that everybody's concerned about. And I understand that the boosters run the asylum and run the program. I got that. But at the end of the day, that's where you're going to have problems, because you're still going to have where, hey, we paid Jaden Rashada $8.5-9 million to come to Miami, and if he sucks in practice and you don't want to start him week one, what happens then? Then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose and everything hits the fan, and then now you have internal rumblings within your program. That's what, you know, coaches like Lane Kiffin, who's very young, he's ahead of the curve. He understands what needs to be done. He's a young guy. He gets the recruiting aspect. He gets it. Now now, and if he's starting to say it, I think he's right. I really do. I think we're at the verge with the NIL and the booster back type of situation where it could go too far to the point where, you know what, it could damage the product, and that's where you, me, Lane, and Nick, we don't want to see that in any capacity whatsoever.
But, Joe, I think the only counter argument I would make to that is if it is a person that is just in love with the money, if it's a recruit or whoever that is getting paid whatever amount of money by a booster back collective to come to a school who won't listen to coaches, who won't be a part of the program, who won't compete to win games, because at the end of the day, that's the barometer that everybody is judged by in the world of sports, professional, amateur, or otherwise, then we operate in a professional type of system now where you have the transfer portal at your disposal. And if it's just about chasing the bag and it didn't work out for you at Miami because you're not actually a good football player or you don't compete well in that system and you want to go transfer somewhere, cool. Let them go transfer somewhere. Let them go somewhere else. That's the nature of what it's like on the professional sports landscape, where I still believe at the end of the day it will be the coupling of the name, image, and likeness, but also just being a good football player and being able to profit off the fact you're a good football player, leading to more and more marketable deals. And if not, I think head coaches are at least hopefully in an understanding of this current climate to know that they can go to the transfer portal themselves and find that replacement. Sure, you lose some time invested in that individual, certainly some monetary ideas invested as well, but you are given the resources in this professional type of landscape that we're operating in, even in college sports at the highest level, certainly in college football, there will be other opportunities out there. We'll continue breaking down what we're seeing across conference media days across the country in CFP up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Back right here on Football Full Circle, diving into SEC Media Days, onto its second day in Atlanta, Georgia, at the home of the College Football Hall of Fame. So, Lisi, we've had a ton of conversation about name, image, and likeness and what coaches are sharing. Of course, there is tons of conversation about conference realignment. Right as we wrapped up yesterday's show, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey was at the podium on the opening day of SEC Media Days and or week, and he was asked about all the changes that we are seeing, how the SEC is comfortable where it stands right now with 16 teams on the horizon when Texas and Oklahoma join the SEC in 2025. And no, he did not have an update if that would be at an earlier time, because it wasn't really his league's decision to make. That was the Big 12 and the administrators at the specific institutions of Texas and OU. But Greg Sankey shared his thoughts on the Big Ten adding USC and UCLA, and he puffed his chest proudly about where the SEC stands on the landscape of college athletics when asked very simply, does it mean more to have Texas and Oklahoma join the SEC as opposed to USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten? Greg Sankey said, yes, it's more significant for us to have Texas and Oklahoma. Do you agree with that sentiment, Joe?
I do, because of where Oklahoma is, not Texas, but because of where Oklahoma is and getting to the college football playoff four times since 2016 with Bob Stoops, yep, and obviously Lincoln Riley, they're in the national spotlight. USC hasn't been to a college football playoff. The last national championship that they won was 2005. It's West Coast appeal from the TV media rights perspective, from that, but obviously the play on the field, I would lean to both, yep, Oklahoma and Texas, you know, more competitive than even what we've seen in UCLA. That's not to take away from Chip Kelly's performance last year, but prior to that, he was 9-15 within the Pac-12 the previous two or three seasons. So they haven't really stepped up between the white lines, and I think that that's where Sankey, you know, really stands firm in the sense they have the best product in sending two teams to the national championship last year, and over the past couple of years, they've done it better than anybody. And you know what? Until teams could duplicate that type of success, or more importantly, conferences, I think Sankey's absolutely right in his assessment.
I guess it's which term of significance is more significant to you, because when it comes to the significance of on-the-field play, certainly here in the past decade, Oklahoma and Texas, even Texas, have had more national success than USC and or UCLA. As Joe mentioned, we've had an 8-year history of this college football playoff format. Oklahoma has made half of those CFPs. 4 of the 8 times we have had a CFP contested, Oklahoma has appeared. So Texas hasn't been there, but the Pac-12 hasn't had a team make the college football playoff since 2016, and it wasn't USC or UCLA. And the two appearances the Pac-12 as a league has made were neither USC or UCLA, Oregon in 2014, Washington in 2016. But from a revenue standpoint, which is why conference realignment is even happening in the first place, you could make an argument that USC and UCLA are more significant. The Big Ten is reportedly garnering $1.1 billion of TV revenue on an annual basis, split out individually among an equal share across the member institutions of the Big Ten. That would be 16 when USC and UCLA are getting there. SEC had already agreed to a deal with Disney and ESPN before OU and Texas joined the league last summer for a $3 billion deal, but annually only pays out the SEC $300 million. Well, Texas already has its own network, Longhorn Sports Network, with ESPN and Disney. So you bring that into the fold and all that TV revenue, it probably ups that deal a little bit, and Oklahoma should garner some attention as well. Maybe they're back at the drawing table, or they're back in the meeting rooms renegotiating the exact terms of that contract. But again, from a significance standpoint, you could make an argument that the Big Ten owns the three biggest TV markets in the country, thus the biggest revenue amount of any conference that we see here from TV rights deals in college football, and thus maybe that USC and UCLA bringing the Los Angeles base and that second biggest TV market in the country to the Big Ten could be slightly more significant. But even me, Joe, as Big Ten Ben, would have to agree that from a competition standpoint, at least here as of late, Oklahoma mainly, but certainly Texas as well, from what you will see on the field and the opportunity to compete for a national championship, is probably more significant to the SEC.
Oh, yeah, it is. And the fact that you're right about the money and the revenue, you know, they have all four corners of the nation covered in terms of the Big Ten. That's what it looks like big picture. The fact that they have more revenue should drive more players to the conference. That's the Big Ten's take. The SEC says, you know what, we have the storied history. We have the teams that, you know, everybody wants to really be like and resemble in terms of Georgia and Alabama, respectively. And that's where we're at. We'll see which one wins over the next 4 or 5 years, because there will be a crossroads at some point when these teams and these conferences take shape in 2024 and 2025. Which one is going to have more viewership? Which one is going to have more eyes on their product? And which one is going to garner the top 5 recruits? We'll see. I still think that right now, when you look at the SEC, it's still regionalized in the sense of you're still within the South, right? You have Texas, you have Oklahoma, close to Louisiana, close to Florida for the most part. The travel isn't all that much. How will the travel affect the Big Ten in terms of having UCLA and USC? Nobody's brought that up until this point, because we don't know. Is it going to be pushed back to later start times? Is it going to be, you know, affect maybe the East Coast teams more as well when they go out west in terms of Ohio State and Penn State? Does the Big Ten really care about that? Or do they just care about, you know what, we have the whole nation turning in and tuning into these games. We don't care if we have a bunch of 500 teams, and that's it. We'll see how it plays out in 10 years or so with an expanded playoff, hopefully. I don't know. Right now, right. I would rather have, if you're asking me, and when I look at both of these products and conferences, I'd rather have the best players, the best talent, and the teams that are competing year in and year out for a national championship, and that's why I would still tune to the SEC, because to me, I love those rivalries, and I love the players that are involved. And that's not to take away from the Big Ten, but you know what, with teams like Rutgers and teams like, you know, Maryland that are starting to close the gap, if they were, let's say, just a tad bit better, maybe, yeah, I would buy into the Big Ten, but I can't right here, right now.
It's hard to argue against the success the SEC has had on the national landscape. Again, 8 years of the current college football playoff format, the SEC has won 5 of those 8 national championships. Alabama has appeared 7 of the 8 years. Georgia now twice. LSU once. The SEC is 12-3 in games in college football playoff matchups not played against an SEC opponent. The SEC has by far the most appearances in the college football playoff as a conference overall. However, this year, Lisi, of those 4 teams discussed that are causing some of these tidal waves in college football, USC, UCLA from the Pac-12, soon to join the Big Ten, and of course, Oklahoma and Texas from the Big 12 to join the SEC soon in 2025. It's actually USC that has the best odds of winning a national championship at 20-1 for 2022. Oklahoma, the 7th best odds at 50-1. Texas is there at 80-1, and then UCLA is 200-1. So maybe this is the year that with Lincoln Riley now as the head coach, USC gets back to that relevance, not just in brand name off the field or as a program, but actually winning football games and competing for a college football playoff and national championship spot.
Maybe, but I'm not buying in. I know they're the most bet team in Vegas and New Jersey. Yeah. The hype train is rolling for Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. That's a huge turnoff for me. I'm so happy that I'm sitting on a UCLA ticket to win the Pac-12 right now. They went from 12-1, like you mentioned, over the weekend down to 10-1. I'll take my shot with Chip Kelly and Dorian Thompson-Robinson and the crew. That's what I want. All the money to go on USC. Let them all buy in, and an 8-4 7-5 record is on the horizon.
And when you look at UCLA, their numbers in the Pac-12 have grown shorter and shorter. Joe Lisi, a true market mover. They were 12-1 to win the conference just a couple of weeks ago. Now 10-1, $2 shaved off that price. Still the 4th best in the Pac-12. And as you guys well know, Joe Lisi and I also very big fans of the Utah Utes, who are 3-1 to win the Pac-12 right now, plus 300, the 2nd best price on the board. I am not putting any money on USC at the moment to either win the Pac-12, to go over their win total of 9.5, or to make the college football playoff or have a shot at winning a national championship. But many changes, Joe, as we are detailing here for the Pac-12 and the Big 12, because the 4 programs we are discussing are the flagship programs of each conference as it stands right now. The Pac-12 for USC and UCLA, at least from a brand name perspective, and Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12. So both conferences, Lisi, have had to respond to these huge changes that are underway for their respective leagues. There was a thought potentially, and conversations were had in a big way, that the Big 12 and the Pac-12, the two 12s, would join forces, join leagues fully together. We got reports last night, Lisi, from ESPN's Pete Thamel, that that will not be the case. The Big 12 and the Pac-12 joining forces, those talks have come to an end. We will get Joe's thoughts on that subject matter, as well as what it might mean for conference realignment, and a quick check-in on Notre Dame, one of the biggest players as conference realignment continues on throughout the country in college football, as Football Full Circle continues on here, the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. Come back and join us after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We roll on right here on Football Full Circle, the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. And Lisi, we finished up on the other side of the break, right before we hit that commercial break, about the big news we got last night, first by ESPN's Pete Thamel, that the idea of the Big 12 and Pac-12 fully merging leagues has now come to an end. Conversations were had, multiple conversations, lengthy discussions over Zoom to see if it was potentially feasible or even even viable for either of the two leagues from a TV revenue rights perspective? Could they match up the scheduling? Would it make sense on so many different facets? But it seems as though those talks have now come to an end, maybe for good, about a full merger between the 12s, the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Were you surprised by this news, Lisi, late last night?
No, because I think eventually Oregon and Washington will be with the Big Ten, assuming if all things go right. And I don't know where the Pac-12 is going to be. I mean, if you're the Big 12, you're doing well. You have Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, BYU coming to your league next year. You have teams that are competitive, bowl teams. One of those teams was in the college football playoff. Why do you want to add teams like Oregon and or let's leave it like this, Oregon State, Washington State, middle of the road national teams that aren't really going to enhance your product too much? And again, I go back, this is not a knock on the Cougars and Beavers. I'm all in on Jonathan Smith and the crew this year, you know, in terms of what they could do from a win-loss perspective. But at the end of the day, we know that they don't garner national recognition, and Chad Ochocinco and Ken Simonton aren't walking on that field, you know, with Derek Anderson. It's just, that's the last time maybe they were somewhat relevant in the national media perspective when they knocked off Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, when Mike Riley was there in the middle part of the decade, they were irrelevant, you know, even though they were winning ball games and being competitive. So you look at the Big 12 and you say, okay, we have an opportunity to really, let's say, be that third best conference. And maybe we're not that far behind. You know, they talked about potentially being a shoulder partner to Notre Dame, for, you know, having games before and after the Irish. That might be good. The way that Notre Dame obviously plays a six-game ACC schedule, what if they flipped that and had a six-game Big 12 schedule? That might look pretty entertaining if you have these Big 12 teams like BYU and Notre Dame maybe squaring off, or UCF and Notre Dame squaring off in the next couple of years.
It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out, right? Because there were some conversations, and after we got this news last night, and some follow-ups, feedback, whatever you want to distinguish it as, of who had the upper hand. Was it the Big 12 or was it the Pac-12, and where these disagreements maybe fell through and it didn't seem like it was viable for one of the sides or the other side or maybe both of the sides at the end of the day? I would agree with Joe. I think the Big 12 has responded incredibly well to Texas and Oklahoma leaving the league as we got that news last summer. In the year since, they have been aggressive about going out and making their responses known. They add UCF and Cincinnati and Houston and BYU, four programs with large fan bases that are incredibly committed to all of their college sports programs. And there were conversations about the Big 12 and aggressive conversations of potentially Pac-12 members like Oregon, like Utah, Washington, the schools from Arizona and Colorado as well, leaving the Pac-12 for the Big 12, where it would be the power two of the Big Ten and SEC. But right under that would be this newly formed power Big 12 conference. And I don't necessarily think the Pac-12 is in a great space, but one of the arguments the Pac-12, or at least representatives of the Pac-12 or sources from the Pac-12, tried to make to why they were in the better spot was because their TV rights deal expires before the Big 12 and they'll have a better opportunity to renegotiate and earn more money. And if they partnered with the Big 12, it was going to be hard to make those timelines work and the Big 12 might be holding them back. I'm not entirely sure that is the case. But, Lisi, there's one thing I do want to touch on here. I mentioned that we had reports within the last 2 weeks from Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports that the Big 12 was at least starting the idea of trying to get schools like Oregon and Washington and Utah and Arizona, Arizona State and Colorado to join its conference, to add member institutions. And as Brett Yormark, the new commissioner of the Big 12, said last week at their media days, the Big 12 is open for business. So although a full merger does not seem likely at this point, I don't believe it means the Big 12 is done expanding its conference or that conference realignment featuring the 12s, the Pac-12 or the Big 12, has slowed down by any means.
Oh, no. You know, the Big 12 needs to really keep being aggressive and adding teams. I agree with that. And if they could get Oregon and Washington and maintain that rivalry in the Big 12, so be it. I that's a great point, and along if they could add the Utes as well. What happens to the Pac-12 then? I mean, what happens to that conference as a whole? Do they just fold? Does the commissioner just not take a check in another year? I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, right. Because the way teams are looking to bolt, they're on life support. I don't see any way, if the Big 12 is not going to partner with the conference, what happens to the conference? What happens to all those individuals? And if you know that, are you actively pursuing to maintain the foundation of this conference moving forward? Like, if you know that nobody wants to partner with you, and you know that the member institutions have one foot out the door because you're not doing anything for them, what's going to, like, what do you, like, what's the end game? Do they just fold? That's it? You just walk away? And now Oregon, Washington, and Utah are left to fend for themselves once USC and UCLA move on? What happens? And I think the Big 12 potentially could be the biggest conference in teams. And I mean, maybe 22, 24 teams. Why not? Why not perch some teams from the ACC if you could do it? I mean, at the end of the day, they're not on the same level as the Big 10 and SEC right now. So you have to get those recognizable names. So why not go out and try to get Clemson? I'm not saying you're going to do it, but why not try to get Florida State and Miami to compete with the teams in the Big 12? If you could do it and throw money at them, why not?
Yeah, absolutely so, because as we know, geographical borders, if you will, or hesitations to conference realignment, not necessarily what is the overarching point here. It is about getting the best programs that actually move the needle when it comes to attracting more TV revenue. Competition is something we all love. We love the competitive nature of a conference and rivalry games that mean something. I get that. That's why we as fans consume the product, and we want to make sure that is maintained. But when it comes to the big ideas of conference realignment, it's more from a revenue perspective that is the bus driver that brings everything into context, because that is the starting foundation of the first conference realignment moves. As these conversations build, it all starts with revenue and is built up from there to see the logistics, the feasibility, all that good stuff. So I don't think the Big 12 is done expanding. I don't think the Pac-12 is in the best position right now. It'll be very interesting to see what George Kliavkov, the new Pac-12 commissioner, has to say at their media days coming up in about a week's time. All of this, Joe, will continue to dominate the headlines as we get ready for a new college football season.
Yeah, and this is great. You know, usually or typically the off season's like, all right, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson, and we know now we're talking about, you know, what do the conferences look like next year? Are we going to expand the playoff? Does it get to the point where the money just overcomes the whole playoff system, and now it's just going to be too big to handle because they're just throwing money around at a huge rate right now? I think it's good. I think it will close the gap. I think it's great for the product in the sense of eventually we will see maybe teams 2025, those teams have an opportunity to compete for a national championship, you know, because of the way their schedule plays out. And that's ultimately what we want. I still think we need a cap because I want the kids to be hungry, but at the end of the day, they can't just jump ship the way Quinn Ewers did from Ohio State to Texas, take the money and run. There needs to be some sort of repercussions, and there needs to protect some sort of businesses locally to where they put out money. They're not going to get burned from a kid leaving or jumping a program. That's the downside of what we're at in terms of NIL and the booster money. But at the end of the day, if it closes the gap in terms of play on the field, I'm all for it, Ben.
I think Dave Aranda, Joe, had a really, really good takeaway from what we're seeing right now and all of these evolutions and what can be perceived as scary changes in college sports. He was speaking at the Texas High School Football Coaching Convention or something of the sort earlier this week. My good friend who works in San Antonio, Nate Ryan, was there and asked Dave Aranda a question about the three big changes we're seeing in college football: NIL, transfer portal, and of course now conference realignment being the biggest that we face. And Dave Aranda said it's almost a repercussion from the system, right? From all these years of the haves being the institutions and the programs and the coaches. They could do whatever they want in front or behind closed doors, and the players really didn't have a lot of agency. Now, as that start to trickle down and the players have a say of what is best for them, it is all of these changes playing out. And that's the context and the history that we need to remember when we're discussing these ideas, that coaches could move at a moment's notice. And we still see that, ergo Lincoln Riley, ergo Brian Kelly, that players hopefully won't follow that same bad example or the guideline that was set. But that is more of what we are seeing right now. The agency, who controls the power, is starting to shift a little bit. And it's after decades long of when that power was only on one side of this equation. Joe, let's get to some of the more fun stuff. Not that the conversations around conference realignment or name, image, and likeness and all that isn't necessarily fun, but we like the trash talk. We like the smack talk here on Football Full Circle. And of course, a big storyline at SEC Media Days this week was not just going to be conference realignment or all of those changes we are seeing, but the offseason war of words between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Nick Saban was at the podium today, says he has nothing but respect for Jimbo Fisher, has no issues with A&M's Jimbo Fisher, and is appreciative of the work that he did while he worked under Nick Saban and what he did, obviously, at Texas A&M. So that was what we expected. Nick Saban was easing up on his critiques of Jimbo Fisher. We'll have to see what Jimbo says when he speaks on the final day of SEC Media Days coming on Thursday. But I love what Will Anderson had to say, Lisi, about it. He said, we noted it, we put it down, and when the pads come on and the game gets going, we'll handle it then. That was some good talk from one of the best defensive players we have seen in college football in the last five seasons.
And Alabama doesn't have an offensive lineman that can contain Will Anderson. They had to make him sit out of spring practice because he was that dominant. I hope Jimbo and Texas A&M's offensive line that has three starters coming back could really account for Will Anderson in that ball game October 8th. They're already 16-point dogs. Now, they do have the type of skilled talent to challenge Alabama, weakness of Alabama, especially in that game in Kyle Field and College Station, was the secondary. So we're going to see how it plays out, whether it be Max Johnson, Haynes King. I still would take the points, 16, even though I think Alabama on paper is the better team entering this year. That's why they play the games. You know, it's one thing to say, you got to back it up if you're Jimbo. You can't talk the talk and not walk the walk.
And last year, Jimbo certainly backed it up. There was a little bit of some jives at each other last offseason. And then as an 18.5-point home underdog, Jimbo Fisher and the Texas A&M Aggies last year pulled the upset over Nick Saban. It was the first time a former assistant had ever beaten Nick Saban. That was followed up by Kirby Smart in Georgia in the national championship game. A couple more minutes left on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We round out today's episode of Football Full Circle live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159 in just a few moments. I'm Ben Stevens. He is Joe Lisi. And Lisi, yesterday, to start off SEC Media Days, Brian Kelly was there for the first time in Atlanta speaking at SEC Media Days. No, he didn't have a Southern accent, of course, but did say how much he loves his new family down there in the Bayou. When we look at the Bayou Bengals, odds for this upcoming 2022 season. Their win total, Lisi, is only 6.5. Only 6.5. What do you think is a fair level of expectation for Brian Kelly in his first year at the helm in Baton Rouge?
Well, I put them at 9-3, and they didn't bring in Brian Kelly to go 500. That's the problem. No. I mean, that's why Ed Orgeron's no longer there. They won a national championship 2 years ago with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, 15-0. I understand the attrition, 14 players to the NFL, but back-to-back 500 seasons? That's not what the norm is in terms of LSU when you compete and you recruit top five talent on the interior lines. So sure, Brian Kelly was there to elevate this program. There's talent there. Kayshon Booty got named to the Maxwell. I mean, Jeray Jenkins, one of the top receivers. You got Noah Kane there from Penn State. You got John Emery. I mean, the list goes on. Jaden Daniels, Miles Brennan, Nussmeier's there. Come on. You got to get to 9 wins. You have to get to 9 wins this year. Anything less is unacceptable. I'm sorry.
Lisi, let me ask you this. 9 wins for LSU, but another team within the SEC that has a new head coach as well is Billy Napier in Gainesville for Florida. Their win total also 6.5. Who wins more games, LSU or Florida?
LSU, major rebuild interior for Florida. That's their weakness. Napier will get it done, but they need a couple of years.
We continue rolling on Football Full Circle. All week long, the focus should be a ton of CFB. But up next here on Sports Grid Radio, it's the Moneyline with one Donnie Wrightside alongside Kevin Walsh. Enjoy their show, and we'll talk tomorrow, everybody.